This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
From NPR, I'm Sam Sanders. It's been a minute. My guest for this episode, she was really curious whether I'd seen her newest project.
Did you watch the movie?
Oh, yeah, I did.
You did?
Of course I did.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
She was excited because for a while now, a lot of us haven't seen that much of her at all.
My name is Kathy Griffin, and I've been involved in a little scandal coming up on 2 years.
It's been that long.
May 30th, 2017.
So you count the days.
The night that changed my life forever.
Okay, let's back up. Talk about how we got there.
What I have found
in 2017, a scandal almost killed Kathy Griffin's career. And it actually started during some downtime for her.
In between, like, gigs, I will just do a million crazy things to try to make you laugh. And on that day, no joke, I had done a photo shoot. We had no paperwork. There was no publicist.
Where were the photos supposed to go?
Anywhere.
Kathy says the whole photo shoot took about 20 minutes, and it was pretty nonsensical, except for one photo.
I did say I want to do some kind of a picture to shame Trump.
Kathy said she was mad at Donald Trump for what he said about Megyn Kelly, the former Fox News host. This is after Kelly grilled him in a presidential debate in 2015.
You know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes. Blood coming out of her, wherever, but she was...
So Kathy Griffin wanted a photo of a bloody Trump.
No joke. Like, I sent a friend of mine out to, like, a party store, like a Halloween store or something, and I said, just bring back anything like America slash Trumpy.
In the picture, Kathy holds up this Trump mask over a styrofoam wig head covered in ketchup. She puts it online, and then the backlash.
Kathy Griffin fired by CNN over that photo of her holding a bloody Trump head.
You might recall this whole story. After that photo came out, the president tweeted about it. Kathy lost work immediately, even after she apologized. And there was more fallout. Federal officials threatened to charge Kathy Griffin with conspiracy to assassinate the president.
I couldn't fly for 2 months.
Okay.
I mean...
at all.
The no-fly list, a terrorist.
People accused her of joining ISIS. She got death threats. Her tour got canceled. Fast forward to now, Kathy Griffin is ready for her comeback. She's out with a comedy feature all about her experience over the last few years. It's called Kathy Griffin, A Hell of a Story. We're going to talk about that movie and more in this chat. And we'll start with Kathy telling us why she still stands by that now infamous photo.
Number one, I want to clear up one thing. I did consult my attorneys before I posted that picture.
Really?
Yes.
So your lawyers may have said it was legal. Did they say maybe don't do
it?
No. They were like,
they were
go
like,
ahead.
First, it's covered.
Okay.
It's covered. And by the way, that's all I need to hear. Because I know that I enjoy pushing the boundaries of the First Amendment, but I also am not crazy. I don't want to violate it.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't want to break the law like anybody. So,
so then you knew it was covered.
I knew it was covered.
And then in
the didn't know it would blow up the way it did.
But in the whole span of the investigation and all this stuff, did anyone in DOJ, any authorities say that you broke the law?
No. They wouldn't say anything directly to me, but they were just telling my lawyers during the whole investigation. They really made it sound like this big investigation. And after the interrogation under oath, because I simply... kept refusing to go downtown in an orange jumpsuit in cuffs because my lawyer said that's the video that they want. Like, they wanted, like, the Whitey Bulger, like, aerial shot of, like, comedian Kathy Griffin. I'm assuming.
In the feature, you really walk us through a wonderful TikTok of how that day played out and when you found out and how you began to, like, process all of this.
Breaking news.
And you go through which people you talked to first. It was such an interesting assortment. On the day that it breaks, you talk to Rosie O'Donnell, and then you have, is it Kris Jenner over for a dinner party? Like,
Oh, yeah.
Who all was in your life that day?
It was such a crazy day. I mean, now upon reflection, I want to think the stars aligned, because I do talk about getting a cold call from Jim Carrey, who I've only met like twice, and I don't have his number, and I just love that he tracked me down.
What did he say?
Jamie Foxx also tracked me down.
Really?
Yes.
What did both of them say?
First of all, I can almost cry just even recounting that, because I also got, 95% of the calls were the other direction. People calling me going, what have you done? Blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. But Jim Carrey said, Kathy, today you're the most famous comedian in the world. Mm. And I was crying and I go, for all the wrong reasons. Uh-huh. He goes, I get it. I see the death threats. And so did Jamie. He's like, you're under heat, girl. You're under real heat. He's like, this ain't Hollywood heat. This is like government heat.
Did Jamie think that you were going to survive it too?
Yes.
And then Rosie, she called you too, huh? What'd she say?
Rosie and Cat Williams called first.
Cat Williams, what did he say?
Cat said the best thing of all.
What did
Cat
he say?
Said, take out a piece of paper and pen. He said, write down the names of the people that call you and support you today.
Ooh.
And by the end of the day, look at that list, and that's your list of real friends. And I was like,
Which three?
Huh?
Which three besides the comics you've listed now?
You know what? I have to say, I'm going to throw Kat in there as four, but yeah, I would say it was like,
Kat, Jamie, Rosie, and Jim.
Yeah. And, let me just say, I love all four of them, but like I said, I'm going to be honest. I don't like hang with Jamie and
Jim. Totally.
I don't, like I said, I don't have their numbers. Yeah. I think Kat is a genius, but sometimes I go a year without seeing him in person.
Yeah. In the special, you do a really good job of laughing about all of this. There's a little bit of tears once, but you're mostly laughing about this. And I wondered the whole time getting ready for this, how much time did it take from the day of the incident for you to start crying and start laughing again? Like, how long was that process?
Well, first of all, I'm pretty dark. And so there were things I laughed at that day. Like, just the over-the-top nature of the accusations. But the other line that I remember Jim Carrey telling me, which was a high compliment, is he said, take as much time as you need to process the story, put it through your Kathy Griffin comedy prism, find a way to tell it and make it funny and relatable and tell it.
You talk in the special about, having some regrets, but I wondered, if you could go back to that day, would you do the effigy in the photo again?
I would. I think I need to stand by the photo because people need to know I didn't break the law. And more importantly, if you or your kid put that photo up on their Twitter, they should not have to go through what I did.
I think, though, and what I was mulling over in my mind, it's definitely allowable legally. Mm-hmm. And you have a right to do this, and this is your right to make such a photo should you want.
Yeah.
But I think, do you think that making that image and putting it out there was good overall for the culture?
Yes,
I think
here's why.
Because I feel everything is so heated up right now.
It's far. It went far. I get it. Colbert had the same issue. He's like, it went too far.
You could do it. You can do it.
That's right.
But
doesn't mean you should.
Does it help?
That's right. There's a long history, and I talk about this in the film, which I didn't realize until Hillary Clinton herself put it in her audiobook, where she said, it was obvious to me it was the send-up of Perseus and Medusa. So, of course,
So there's a long history of this kind of image.
Of this kind of image. Look at Der Spiegel. Look at Charlie Hebdo. And honestly, when I did that photo shoot, I truly thought the photographer, he was going to try to send it to, paper or, like I said, Der Spiegel. And do I think it's necessary? Yes. And I'll tell you why. This, I wasn't a W fan, right? And I'm not going to rewrite history and act like he was this saint. But I have been doing stand-up since HW, Bill Clinton, W. Mm-hmm. I have never seen anything like this, where if you make a joke about the president of the United States who works for us, you may die or go to prison forever or be stigmatized and not.
Yeah.
I'm not insurable. I've had so many publications say that I have lupus, that I'm bald. I love that those AMI guys turned, because people don't know. They don't just own The Inquirer, which did a million hit pieces
on me.
Say
what AMI is for folks.
AMI is American Media, and they own The Inquirer, but they have also been able to do an acquisition where they now also own OK Magazine, In Touch, Life and Style.
Oh, wow.
In my industry, these are called weeklies. I didn't know that they were in bed with the administration. I just thought they were guilty pleasure magazines. And now those magazines, which I'm sure agents read and network people read. Well, there's an article saying Kathy Griffin has lupus. No, I don't. Yeah. But that person might go, oh, I can't hire her. She's uninsurable. The president shouldn't be able to do that to any citizen, public or private.
Could you have seen yourself making the same imagery under another president besides Trump? You didn't before.
No. And that's the reason is at 58 years old, I have never seen anything like this. And I have traveled the country for so many years prior to the tour, the 50-city tour that was canceled because of the photo halfway through. I had done an 80-city tour the year before. I mean, I have been to everywhere
but
in America.
This gets to the part B of my question. Mm-hmm. And like what I feel like I've been observing in the time since Trump began to run for office and into his presidency, he has escalated the rhetoric of everyone.
Right.
So Trump is this combative, bombastic figure. He ascends, and then before we know it, we have all ratcheted up our volume as well.
Yes.
And we can.
Yeah.
But overall, if all of the culture makers in the world, or like in America, ratchet up as much as he ratchets up, does it get us to a good place as a society?
You're absolutely right. And I feel just like, you know, when I go in for jobs over and over and again, and whether it's a network or studio, and they say like, oh, you're really funny, it's great to meet you, but we already have a female comedian, or we already have a comedy person for our channel, whether it's male or female. I am that person that goes, yeah, we're not all monolithic.
Yeah.
So I feel really strongly, first of all, I'm not a comedy snob. I think it's great that Jerry Seinfeld doesn't swear. I think it's awesome that Jim Gaffigan is so clean. He can do stand-up for the Pope.
I think Kevin Hart's funny.
I think Kevin Hart's hilarious. And I also think there's a space for the type of comics like myself that are the edgy, whistleblower, naughty. I mean, you know, we call it tea. And this is really me spilling the tea, but about the government. And it's also a guy I've known for 25 years.
Well, because you were on The Celebrity Apprentice.
I wasn't on The Apprentice.
I
was on Part of Two Challenges.
I'm sorry, okay.
But I know him from everything from when you're a female comic, you get to know a lot of these people because you know, everyone always needs a comedian to host. Mm-hmm. So that's my dirty little secret is the way I actually know so many A-listers isn't because they like me or invite me to their house. It's because
you
I get the call
things.
And they always need a comedian to host, whether it's a, you know, I've hosted the Billboard Music Awards, but I've also hosted, you know, the Race to Erase MS, et cetera.
So you've met Donald a few times.
Many times.
What was he like?
He was a joke. And believe it or not, when I knew him, he was the type of guy that I got along with okay because I could make a joke right to his face and he just kind of, you know, because he doesn't really...
He doesn't have shame.
He's so myopic.
Well, also,
he doesn't
there's
listen
no
anything.
Shame.
He does. I don't think he would really even hear it. Like, I actually, like, no joke, the last time I saw him, he hired me to roast him on an episode of The Apprentice. So he knows my gig back and forth. I actually sat next to him one time for 4 hours at a roast of Larry King, and he was like in my ear the whole time, and I'm like thinking, oh, this one. Like, so for
what did he
all
say
the,
to you?
He's super nonsensical. Like, it's worse now than when I knew him, and I obviously haven't seen him now in a few years, but he would just say really weird stuff. Like, he turned to me and he goes, so you're a female comedian. And by the way, I had known him for at least 10 years, and I go, yeah, next thing you know, we're going to want to vote. And he just had literally no reaction to that. No reaction. So that, I mean, you know, then my little horns come out and I'm like, oh, this is the type of guy that I can kind of like mess with him because he's not listening.
So then it's interesting because
so he seemed like a harmless fool. So
it's
that's
also
what
the
I was
kind
saying.
Of thing where he could have called you after that image came up because he had met you several times and knew you. And
he knew, in my opinion, he was activating the army. Honestly, anybody can track this. You know, all my comments are flooded on my social media platforms with robots, and they're all like, ISIS lady, be bad. You know, it's not pretty. I have to warn my friends if they post a picture. Like, if we take a photo and post it, I'm just know that the comments are from
I'll be ready for it.
Robots.
I'll be ready for it.
They're not going to be pretty.
Okay.
And then occasionally you're going to get like a love the fierce diva.
Yeah.
But there will be people accusing you of maybe joining ISIS with me, which my joke is when people still think I'm an ISIS, I always go like this. I worked at the gift shop for like a week. Calm down. And then I just watch their faces like turn gray because they think it's real.
All right. Time for a break. When we come back, Kathy talks about her friendship with the Kardashians. Also, heads up, we use some strong language in this next section. BRB.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment at your convenience. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com/minute to learn more.
We're back with a new season of Rough Translation.
Yeah.
And this time, we are following people who break the rules.
I mean, lying is part of the business.
In my opinion, the best revenge against ISIS is to be humane.
Am I supposed to punch her?
Yeah.
New episodes every other Wednesday. Subscribe.
I want to talk about celebrity culture, which is still a good part of the special, and which is the way that I came to love you. I can recall as a kid watching your specials, and I'll never forget whichever one it was where you spent a good amount of time calling Renee Zellweger a puffy coke whore.
Renee Zellweger called me that day. She actually texted me, and she was like, hang in there, girl. And that's
so she was okay with that.
Not only that, it was such an affirming thing, because one of the things that I do admire about, like I said, those whose shoulders I stand on is it would be so gratifying for me when I would hear, he's no longer with us, but Rickles or somebody like Don Rickles saying, you know, after a certain amount of time, these people I made fun of for all these years, they would actually say
like,
I get it. You're just kidding.
Yes.
So, Zellweger, obviously, you know, when she texted me a supportive text, I was like, oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I really was just kidding, and I think you're great. Mm-hmm. And guess how I met her? I was hosting a charity gig. She did this really cool dramatic reading, and we came buds. And then she ended up going, you're just kidding.
Yeah.
So
I don't think I've ever seen a comic get into, like, the metaphysics of being celebrity in the way that you have for so long.
I'm fascinated by it.
What is, like, in your, 20, 30 years of, like, mocking celebrity, what is your big takeaway about the celebrity industrial complex?
I think the takeaway that people find the most fascinating is when they feel like, number one, they're in their living room with one of their best friends.
Yeah.
Like, that's my highest compliment. When people say, this just doesn't feel like a regular comedy show with one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, oh my gosh, I was led into this person's living room and they don't know anyone's here and they're just spouting off with impunity.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing is I've learned people really like when someone pulls back the curtain.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's what made my life on the D-list a success is that they did all these, like, focus grouping and all this other stuff. And people said their favorite part was watching her go through something in real life, and that was a real show. Nothing was scripted, no writers.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the show, seeing it hit the stage and seeing how she took that incident and then went, oh, I can make this a funny, quote, chunk. And so I I am just someone who is truly not afraid to pull back the curtain. Yeah. And what I've learned about celebrity that I find the most conducive to comedy is it's a very two-faced industry.
Yeah.
But that's what I find humorous is these celebrities that appear to be one way and we really think and we believe it. And if I have an experience with them that shows that they're different, then I love to go, you know,
actually look and see this.
That's right. And if it's funny, honestly, believe it or not, I really don't just go out there and go, so-and-so is ugly. Good night. Like, if it isn't funny,
And usually it's funny because I like that you point out that celebrities in a certain way,
there's a lot of hypocrisy. Let's just use the word.
And they'll do anything it takes to stay a celebrity. There's this moment in the special where you talk about, not on purpose, the night in which the photo breaks and you're the biggest story in the world is also a night that you have a dinner party scheduled with
Kris Jenner. Kris Jenner. And I'm sobbing and I'm a wreck. And also Academy Award nominee Melanie Griffith, who's different. She's more like bohemian.
Yeah.
And Kris gives me advice. And I'm saying, I shouldn't apologize because all my comedian friends are mad at me because I apologized. And then she just is like, she's like cutting a steak. And God love her, she's cold as ice. And I do think she's killed people. Now, I can't prove it, but would you cross her?
Hell no.
Thank you. Anyway, so she's cutting her steak and she's like, no, it was a good idea. We do it all the time.
Apologizing.
And then people just start laughing because they know it's true.
She's like, they apologize all the time.
Because they know it's real.
They
and I'm quoting her.
Yeah.
And they go, you know, one of the kids takes a trademark by mistake and then, you know, they get sued and we just apologize. And I was like, oh, I was laughing that very night.
When you are seeing that layer of celebrity peeled back and you see these real celebrities in these real moments,
yeah.
Do you respect these celebrities more or less? Because they're shrewd.
Both. And you know what's interesting? The Kardashians are an example. Like, the fact that during this whole thing, I lived right next door to, of all people, Kim and
Which
Kanye.
Which is cray-cray.
Cray-cray, all caps. And I was so happy and grateful. And truly that when I bought the house, I foolishly believed a tabloid that had said, oh, they moved back to Ballas or Bassus or wherever their country is. Because I believe I think Chris made wherever they live its own country. I can't prove it, but I think she's done it. Or she could in one phone call.
She definitely could.
And so, you know, when I first moved there, I honestly did want to assure Kim, who I do know, like, I'm really not, like, stalking you. And I know this must look weird because I've called you guys every names in the book for 10 years. And what was so delightful, they're so loaded. And, like, when I first met them, I think they did kind of stress me. And it was so lovely to hear Kim be like, oh, my God, you're, like, the least of our problems. Like, we're, like, mad at Taylor Swift right now. So, like, we really literally don't care about your jokes. Like, welcome. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I want to tell the audience that, too.
Yeah.
So after years of going, like, oh, the Kardashians, blah, 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 I want to go, guess who turned out to be, like, there for me? Freaking Kim Kardashian.
What did Kim say after all of it?
First of all, she said, after all the stuff that we've been through, she's like, I got your back and nobody's going to come for you. And we made this really sweet deal, which I'm very proud of, which is she is obsessed with Elizabeth Taylor. And I was friends with Joan Rivers.
Shows.
Right? Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. And she didn't know that they were best friends. And I said, did you know that they had a deal? And she's like, literally? I go, no, figuratively. But anyway, I said the deal. And this Joan told me this and I believe it. Uh-huh. I never met Liz Taylor, but I'm just believing Joan Rivers because I do. Anyway, she said that their deal was they really became friends. And first Liz would be offended by the jokes. And after a while, she just started laughing about them. Huh. And the deal was you can make whatever jokes about me if I have the freedom to just like call you when I feel like I need a laugh from the great Joan Rivers. Huh. And Joan's like, done. And so I go to Kim, we're going to make a deal. And she's like, what? I go, we're making a deal. And she's like, okay, why? I go, I get to call you guys dirty whores as long as I want, on or off TV. And whenever you're feeling like you need a laugh, I will literally, as she would say, literally, either come to your house or you call me and I will give you a private Kathy Griffin concert until you're laughing.
Has that happened?
Three times.
Stop it.
No, I won't. I went over there twice. I would sit on her couch. And, you know, we talked after the robbery and I've been held up at gunpoint twice. So we talked about that.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not going to leave till you're laughing. So we talked about it. And then Kanye walks in and then I had to start because, you know, he thinks he's Pablo Picasso and he makes them all wear shirts that say Pablo. So I'm trying to make Kim laugh.
Yeah.
So he comes downstairs and she's like, oh, my God, I didn't even know you're home. And then she's like, you know, Kathy. And he just, you know how he gives that like empty stare.
Yeah.
And besides, I had met him one time. I'm like, I get it. I'm just, you know, he's not a big talker.
Yeah.
So, of course, I have to push it. And I go like this, Pobs.
You can like
short
Pablo
for
Picasso.
Pablo. And I put my arms out. Uh-huh. And it was the hug where like his body like stiffed.
Oh, no.
And I'm like rocking him because I'm thinking, oh, no, I'm not letting go now. I got him. And he's so uncomfortable. And Kim's laughing.
Oh, my God.
And she's like, honey, you know her. And then he for real, he walks out of the room almost like Riverdance style. And he goes like this. This never happened. I wasn't here. This never happened. Okay. Now, if you think I'm not going to honor the deal with Kim, which is I'm allowed to talk about them.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot keep that story inside me.
And I'm
so
only
glad
human.
You
shared it. In a minute, Kathy tells us about her struggles searching for a distributor. Right now, that film that we talked about earlier, her newest project, it's only been shown at South by Southwest. Coming up, we talk about why it's been so tough for her to find a distributor for her latest project.
Is it a Trump thing? Is it people are afraid of getting, quote, the tweet?
More after the break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, where opportunity takes root. More information is available at waltonfamilyfoundation.org. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Grammarly. Today, people are working to innovate and do more in their workdays, but coming up with fresh ideas and quick responses can be tough. Introducing Grammarly Go, a product offering personalized generative AI communication assistance that will change the way you write. With just a few clicks, Grammarly Go can ideate, compose, and rewrite thoughtfully, accelerating your productivity and unlocking your creativity. Go to grammarly.com/go.
Find the 1A podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What is next for you?
You're going to try to shop this movie still.
I was trying to shop the movie, and I'm going to just say, look, I don't know how these things get done. Because like I said, I don't even have an agent. I am still persona non grata.
Wait, you don't have an agent
right now? No! I have a lawyer. I have a great publicist. Everybody in town knows where to find me. They all know how to get to Kathy Griffin. Yeah, I talk about myself in the third person now.
I'm
that person.
Yeah.
But I am hoping that the people will somehow want to see it. And honestly, I will say that the response in South by Southwest was the polar opposite of my sort of current Hollywood bad girl status. I got love, but also I got real interest. And the questions were different. They weren't just like, what's so-and-so like? They were going, okay, wait, talk to me about this process and what should I be worried about and how did you get through this part? Or people would say, I had this difficult experience and laughing got me through it. And like, it was a bigger conversation.
Would you self-distribute this film?
If I have to, I sure will.
When do you know if you have to?
I'll know if I have to if I don't get an offer where I feel like, well, number one, I have to retain ownership. So that's number one. So I got my entire library back from NBC Universal. It has no value now, but who knows, someday. and that is another message to people going like, oh, okay, you know, ownership is where it's what it's really about. Like I learned that from the music industry.
Oh, yeah.
People, that's how all those singers go broke.
Oh, yeah.
It's the licensing and the publishing that is where
TLC was broke.
That's right. And yet probably some executive who said yes to Waterfalls got more money than Candy Burris or TLC.
Yes.
And so, you know, I was like, oh, and it took me a while to learn that, you know. And I always talk about like the first 2 years I did New Year's Eve on CNN. It didn't even occur to me to ask to get paid anything.
What, you did the first CNN New Year's for free?
The first 2 years.
Ma'am.
Yeah, that's right. And then when I asked for a raise my eighth year, when the show went from 90 minutes to 4.5 hours, Jeff Zucker was so offended that I even asked for a raise, he docked me 30%. And I still did.
While paying Anderson more?
Well, of course. Of course.
Y'all haven't spoken.
No, and that one just hurts. Like, I just am honest with people. I go, there's no punchline for that one. It just hurts. And the reason I talk about it is I really do think everyone knows that feeling of, like, you thought this was the person you could count on, and then sometimes you're wrong.
And there's also a way, this is what puzzles me about him, there's a way to say, I don't like that she did this one thing, but she's my friend.
Right.
How close were y'all?
I thought very close. I loved him. I really loved
him. Do you still love him?
I'll always love him because I'm that type of person. I'm like nostalgic and I tend to look at my history with someone. I don't see a future for us as friends, frankly, but you know.
Yeah. Well, I got to let you go soon, but a thing that I noticed in your story and in the experiences of comedians, period, right now, it's a hard time to be a comic because you have to walk on eggshells.
Like nothing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's really different out there.
But the folks that get the worst and harshest pushback when they step over whatever line is imagined, it's always women comics.
Yeah.
I mean, we can go through the list, you know. Samantha Bee.
Oh, yes. I mean, they tried to Michelle Wolf and Samantha Bee.
But then there are men like, I don't know, Bill Maher, who it doesn't matter what they say or do.
Oh.
They're there.
There are men that have, are you kidding? First of all, been arrested 5 times, tanked shows, OD'd on sets where their shows are $2 million an episode and they're ODing on coke. Like, don't even start me.
So then, given that landscape, seeing how much harder it is still, especially now for the women doing the stuff that you're doing, what do you want to say to the young women who might hear this, who know that they're funny and might say, I want to do what Kathy does one day. I want to be a comic. I want to be a funny person. What is your advice to them?
I love when people ask me that because I always, number one, I'm very honest. And I go, look, I don't know if everyone's going to tell you this, but I'm just going to tell you my experience. It is almost as bad as the day I started regarding sexism and misogyny. So just accept it. You're going to have to work harder than the guys and jump 10 times higher.
Like they say, twice as hard for half as much.
Absolutely. That is my experience. And maybe it isn't someone else's, but I'm telling you, I've lived it. Mm-hmm. Also, I always say you're going to have to figure out a way to do it all within the system. So as much as it seems like I do crazy things and stuff, I'm still, believe it or not, doing it within
certain
framework of whether it's a film festival or, you know, a wacky picture I put online that isn't offensive, you know, trying to keep motivating in whatever way possible. Mm-hmm. And I always tell, like I said, certainly young people of color, gay folks or women. And maybe, by the way, this is any industry in this environment, my humble opinion. Uh-huh. You know, be aware. And be aware of what's going on. It's important that you have a broad base of interests. Hmm. So if you're a comedian, I think that it is okay that it's expected of you to be up on stuff, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And by the way, it'll make you better. It'll make you more interesting, mm-hmm. whether you're a comedy writer or a comedy performer mm-hmm. or writing a script. Mm-hmm. And the ones I know that have been successful, the most important thing is if you love it, You just don't stop no matter what.
Hmm.
And by the way, I don't mean if you're bombing for 5 years, then I got bad news for you.
Yeah,
you're not cut out for
go.
This.
Yeah.
But if you, like me, if you've had some success and you've mm-hmm. had more yeses than no in the long run, mm-hmm. you're onto something. And if you really love it, and you have to have what I consider to call to be a burning desire. Because mm-hmm. if you are in a marginalized community, and mm-hmm. once again, I'm saying 58-year-old woman, even though I have white privilege, 58, trust me, I might as well be 158 in Hollywood. But, you know, I think the most important thing that the only example I'm trying to set is, I'm not high and mighty, obviously. It's just important that people see I didn't go down. Mm. This is also a business where, like I said, you can make a ton of money one year and make nothing the other.
So save some.
Honey. I just did an interview with The Economist. I was so excited because I am all about save, save, save.
Yeah.
And my joke is save for a rainy day like I did because I had a monsoon. And thank God I saved it. So if you get a little success.
Save it.
Save it. There's no rush.
Monsoon.
It's like those shows like on TLC, like The Curse of the Lotto.
Because
they all go crazy and buy 10 Lamborghinis.
Yeah.
I'm like,
don't
all right, Bieber, calm down.
Don't do that.
That's right.
Last question. You said that you had a monsoon. Is the sun back out yet for you?
The sun's coming back out and... The part that I've made peace with is I'm going to have to do this one myself. Like, nobody's got a shovel for me, and it's going to help me dig my way out of it. So I'm going to just have to keep, like I said, doing shows at the Laugh Factory so people can go, oh, she's not like
she's
bitter anti-president person. She's out there just being ridiculous and funny, and they were super excited, and I can't wait to do it next Monday. And I'll wait till I do my next tour because this last one was so big and it was so sort of single topic that some time has to pass.
Mm-hmm.
I have learned, and I really do believe, on my pessimistic days, I have lived one phone call can change your life. When I got the phone call from Warner Brothers saying, you're starting as a regular on a network show on Monday, and then I did 23 episodes a year for 4 years, it changed my life in a phone call. So I always tell people that too. Like, if you're down, it really, I've lived it. It can happen.
Kathy Griffin, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Many thanks again to Kathy Griffin. You can catch her performing at the Laugh Factory on Mondays here in Los Angeles. You may even see me there. You can also catch Kathy's film once she finds someone to distribute it. All right, that's all for this week. Back in your feeds Friday. Talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.